And boy, that was supposed to have been the worst disease there ever was in this world, as I remember it.
No, we used to go over with saying out there, the sign on the door, you cross the street.
Yeah, we do that too.
I don't remember who that was, but it could very well have been the Wheats.
I think that's right, Wheats.
Floyd Wheats,
yeah.
My age. You and Jack are about the same age, aren't you?
Jack's Eugene, my brother Eugene's age. About a year and a half younger.
Okay, what year were you born?
I was born October 20th, 1919.
Oh, okay. And Jack was born in 21.
21,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, where is Gene?
Gene has been a pharmacist in Ogden for years and years.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. He took his education at the University of Utah.
Uh-huh. Became a pharmacist.
And you and he are the only ones I remember. So did you have more children after you moved to Marriott, or was there another boy, Albert?
Wendell was born.
Oh, yes, before you left.
Before we left, and perhaps Donald.
Okay.
Delbert was the young one who was born in Marriott, but I think they were all born there. But I'm the same as you. I only remember Jack and June, and mm-hmm. I now know there's a Mary and a Stuart.
Right, but they were born after you left.
That's why I didn't know them. I never saw them in any church records in the 7th Ward. I wonder why.
Because Stuart didn't go to church. Mostly, he should have been on the baptism records, but outside of that, he has never done anything in the church. But Mary was very active. and she married from 1502 also, and then they lived up on 16th Street up there above, you remember the Lynch brothers that were brick masons?
Don't think so.
Okay, well anyway, they lived east on 16th Street above the park.
Above it.
In a little house. I don't remember who owned it. They bought it, and so that's where they lived for a while.
What year were you born in?
15.
You were born in 15. 4 years older than I, probably. What
you know
month?
My sister, May. Irma Langford.
I don't know any Langfords that I remember.
You didn't go to Weaver College.
No.
That's probably fine.
I've never been to college. When it was time, when I graduated from Ogden High School in 1933, height of the Depression.
Yeah, absolutely.
My folks said to me, you go to Weaver College, become a school teacher, and pay us back. I never wanted to be a teacher. And the thoughts of going to college frightened me to death.
Is that so? It really wasn't something that people talked about.
Uh-huh.
Tracy just was lucky that the teacher told him he ought to go to college. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because you got through high school, that was it.
Yeah. But that was a thing to do, of course. But anyway, I didn't want to be a teacher, and I knew it. Isn't that interesting? I knew I didn't want to be a teacher. And then he came on the scene.
He was a teacher.
No, he wasn't a teacher. Before I graduated, he came on the scene. And we got pretty thick and went together for 4 years. He waited till I grew up. And so that was why I married at 19 and a half, because
he'd been waiting so long.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was about right.
And I had worked.
But they did. The people were waiting later and getting married later in those days.
But
some of them were 25. My mother was 25, and my father and mother were 25, 26. His was
31 and 32.
Yeah. Well, anyway, do you remember the Bradshaws that lived on Jefferson and 13th, just beyond past 13th? They lived in a little tiny house way back in the lot.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Anyway. I remember Jesse Price next door.
Okay.
North. Mm-hmm. And the people straight across had a little tiny store straight across from our house. And a cherry tree on the corner that we used to climb around in.
Colburn's?
Was that Colburn?
Well, Colburn's lived there, but I don't remember them having a store, but maybe they did.
It was really a small one.
Yes.
They just had candy bars and a few other things.
It must have been Colburn's. Mm-hmm.
And that's where I heard my first dirty joke, and it was so dirty I can't get it out of my mind to this day.
Don't tell us.
I'm not.
From one of the Coburn boys.
I guess.
In the store.
We're climbing around on the cherry tree.
Uh-huh.
There
I
on the corner.
There was a Coburn in our school, but I can't remember his name. They weren't Colburns. They were
Coburn. I think that's what
Coburn. Well, there were Coburns in our 18th.
And they were not LDS.
Aren't they?
Those people. Well, one of the kids cheated me once. My mom made really good cookies. And so I went across the street, and the kid said, it must have been the Coburn kid, he says, I'll trade you one of our candy bars for your cookie, your mother's cookie. So I made the trade. Walked across the street, opened up the wrapper, and there was a rock in it. So I turned around and threw the rock through the door in their store.
Oh, crazy. Then ran.
And ran. And I don't know whether I ever hit anything or anybody or not.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, his name was Jimmy.
Jimmy, huh?
Jimmy Coburn.
Uh-huh. Now, on the other corner, this would be the southwest corner, they had a billy goat tied to a telephone pole. Do you remember that? They had a goat.
You sure it was the corner, or was it down to?
Well, it might have been down a couple.
Okay, I think that was the. I was trying to think of those people's names.
Is that the one that they used to hook up to the little
cart
and take pictures?
No, that's somebody else.
No, I don't think they ever did that. Mr. Spade lived in that southwest corner, and then his son and his wife and child lived there in that house on the corner, the southwest corner. And then below them was somebody else, and then in the next house, which was right close to the sidewalk, which was very unusual in that neighborhood. And I was trying to think of those people's names. Anyway, they had a mean dog that was called Beans.
You remember mean dogs, don't you?
Yes.
I used to go blocks to get away from the mean dog.
I was never afraid of a dog.
I was always afraid of dogs.
And Jack was friends with this kid. What was her name? Anyway, he was friends with that boy, and one day Jack came home just crying his heart out like this, and what happened? Beans bit me, and he'd been bitten here on the arm by that dog. Uh-huh. Well, nobody knew if it was rabid or not or anything. And anyway, nothing happened to Jack, but later, the people that lived west of those people, that dog bit the girl's face.
Uh-huh.
And I think, and they might have been the ones that had the goat, but that's just not in my memory.
Well, now, I remember a recreational hall. You go along Jefferson Avenue, you hit 12th Street, and
right.
Great big barn of a thing.
Right. We called it the barn.
Is that what it was called? I can remember being the parties there.
21st Ward. That was the 21st Ward, and that's
but the 7th Ward would use it, too, and maybe other wards?
Yeah.
Well, it seemed to me it had a roof that you could look up and see daylight through.
Okay, I don't remember that.
It was an old building with holes in the roof.
Well, Tracy wouldn't have missed that. He observes everything.
Well, and also he was a little younger than I see, so the old building would have been older.
Uh-huh.
They finally tore it down and built the new 21st Ward around on Porter, you know, on 9th or something, 10th or Porter, whatever. But anyway, yes, that's where we had all our recreation. And my dad and Bill Brown, do you remember the Browns that lived there on Jefferson and 13th?
No.
He was a mailman.
Was he?
You may have gone by then. But anyway, my dad and Bill and some of the other elders got together and put on a minstrel show over in that old building.
Oh.
Oh, and that was great. They let me sell the Eskimo pies
during
intermission.
Well, what was an Eskimo pie in those days?
Same as it is.
Yeah.
What, an ice cream bar?
Ice cream
didn't
with chocolate.
Stick on it.
Didn't
really?
Have a stick.
No stick, but they were Eskimo pies.
Huh.
And I always loved to wait on people and work in the store and do that sort of thing, so that I was in the height of my glory. and they were in blackface in those days. They were.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was a real big thing, and Mama and some of the other ladies sewed all the costumes for them. They had swallowtails.
Oh, yeah.
They were made out of crinoline, but... And Dad had a pair of shoes about that long. He was one of the end men. And I've forgotten who the interlocutor was. Somebody that didn't like his face, of course, but oh, that was wonderful. And then, when I was in junior high, some of the girls wanted to have a basketball team. I guess it was from the wards, because we practiced in that old barn. But we called it the barn. That's all we called it. But it was the 21st ward.
Do you remember kids fishing for minnows on Mill Creek?
No.
Well, that's something they were doing. They were having fish fries.
Minnows?
Really? Yeah, they're frying little tiny fish like that.
Yeah.
Just eating them, you know. That well, still not too much worse than sardines. But anyway, I can remember that. When you probably went to Mountport School.
You bet.
So you'd go down 16th Street and you'd go over a hill.
Yes, yes, by the old mill.
Over the hill.
Right. Well, that's by the old mill. Isn't that where they got the idea of the Mountport?
No.
Mountport was the other corner.
Remind me of that in a minute. But the mound there was what left from the mill pond.
Oh.
And the rest of it was gone. The east part of it was gone. So the only the west part was there. Yes, we went down 16th and over that.
So, but that was not a natural mound then. That was an artificial one.
That's right.
Well, I didn't know that.
Now, where did the Mountport come from then?
West 12th Street and... west of Washington.
Oh.
Just west of Washington.
It would have been the northwest corner, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, still there?
I think not, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But in all my life going to Mountport, I never knew about that until I guess I must have been in junior high, I'm not sure when this happened. But some boys had gone over there and dug in it and found some Indian.
Yeah.
Relics.
Bones.
Oh, bones.
Not relics. They may have found relics too, but they bones. So then they were desecrating, and so that was off limits. But I was never over to Mountport until years and years and years later, when they finally had built a ward over there, and I think it is the Mountport Ward. I think there's a chapel over there, but...
Weren't they holding all faces west there too? And
is that where it was?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I just got a little confused about that, but yes.
Mm-hmm. And Jack, did he ever sing the lead, or was he always supporting?
He was always the lead.
He was always the lead?
Yeah.
Okay, I remember him bringing in some guy from outside.
Well, except for Igor Gorin.
Oh, yeah, Igor Gorin.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But see...
Well, till then, he was always...
Well, there. I'm sorry, I misquoted there. Roland Perry was the music man up at Weaver when Jack was there.
Yeah.
And Roland wrote A Child Is Born with Jack in mind for the lead for that. Then he wrote All Faces West, and they brought Igor Gorin in, and he was the lead, and Jack was the next lead. Sorry about that.
Well, I say essentially he was the lead and not in it most of the time.
But they brought Igor Gorin in.
I think we went to one of those.
Well, I remember after we were married coming back to Ogden, and Mother had tickets for it.
Mm-hmm.
He used to come back every year, didn't
yes,
he?
Yes, for and, quite a while he did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I went to Mountport School the first and second grade.
Oh.
And the second grade teacher, I'm pretty sure her name was Jensen. But I don't remember the first grade teacher. Mm-hmm. You would have probably gone through the same classes, but may not have been the same teachers.
That's true.
His brother taught history, I don't know.
Oh, really? Which one?
Donald. Oh. But he spent most of his life out to the north of Ogden. I forget what they call the school out in that direction these days. Out in Taylor or Pleasant View or
that.
Somewhere out there. That's where he spent most of his time. I'm not sure he ever taught at Mountport.
I taught
Well, if he did, he may have been there a year or two, but almost his entire life was out there in a junior high in the northern part of the valley.
Well, are you going to take these people to lunch?
Yeah.
We'd better do that.
I wonder if there's anything else I want to know. Let's see. Lots of things I want to know, but probably no solutions to what I want to know.
That's the way it goes. You can always write me a letter or call
me.
So
how many children do you two have?
We had four, but we lost two of them with Rh negative.
Oh, really? Before they knew what to do about that.
Well, that's the third one. Was just when they first
found out
onto that. And I don't know whether my doctor knew about it or whether he didn't, but anyway, that baby was born, stillborn.
Uh-oh.
And he had started to decompose.
Oh my.
I had a mask all over my face and part of my arms, and after the baby was born, I broke out in boils. All over my, not a lot, but I had several boils in different parts of my body from all that poison.
Oh.
Then about 4, 5, or 6 years later, I can't remember when it was now, I got pregnant again, and the doctor did know about it, and he just happened to think about it, to take a test on me. and so he told Paul that I had it, but I didn't know it. And so the baby was born, this was when we were in Ogden, and the third baby was in Salt Lake here. Mm. So he told Paul about it, and the baby was born in the middle of the night, and they rushed him in and transfused him, gave him the wrong blood.
Oh.
He came in the middle of the night after I'd had that baby and woke me up to tell me, June, we gave your baby the wrong blood. If you'd like to try this again, it would make an interesting experiment. I was not unconscious, and I wasn't out of my mind. That's exactly, and I wouldn't believe it if anybody told me a doctor said that, but he did. And he was a
Who
good
was your doctor?
Aaron. I'm going to say Burr, and I wasn't. It's not Aaron Burr. He was the traitor.
I just wondered if it was Skidmore.
No.
He was that's when we had our
meeting. He was a short name, I can't remember.
It was like Aaron Bird. Anyway, it'll come to me. I'll think
Did
about
that child die?
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Oh, they killed it. He was beautiful.
Oh.
Beautiful, full time.
But your first two were all right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Except that I had albumin with my first one, and so they put me on a salt-free diet.
Premature.
And then the doctor told my mother, that was Henry Strandquist in Ogden. Excuse me. He said, we'll concentrate on June and not worry about the baby. And so when she was done, so then he forced labor, and she was 2 weeks early. She weighed 3 pounds and 9 ounces.
Mm. That's been earlier than that.
Well, I'd been on the diet.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. So anyway, also there was no money, and so he said, we won't keep this baby here in the hospital, you can take care of her. She was born in August.
Oh.
So he sent that premature baby and me home to my mother.
First baby?
Yes.
Oh my word.
And that's when they kept us in the hospital 10 days
yes.
anyway.
Yes, and you couldn't walk around.
Yeah,
I had my first one that way. Your husband had to carry over the threshold because you couldn't walk.
Right.
Because they let you dangle your feet on about the 14th day or the 10th day.
So anyway, there was Mama with me and that baby. Mm. The baby had to be fed every 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
She was too weak to nurse. And he said, if you don't wake her up, she'll just lie there and die.
Mm.
So Mama had to get a wet wash rag and put it on Ann's feet and her hands,
stroke her feet,
and
yeah.
her face, and then take my milk and feed it to Ann with a medicine dropper through her nose so she'd swallow.
Oh my word.
Because she was too young, too little, too weak, but she lived.
Amazing.
And then our second one was okay, and those two we have. Ann's a school teacher here in Salt Lake, and David is an attorney. But 6 years ago, he and Paul were in a car accident, and David is paralyzed from the waist
down. Oh, really?
Oh, my.
My goodness.
So, anyway, that's that. How many children have you?
We have 7.
Oh, wonderful.
And they're all healthy.
Wonderful.
Wonderful. 2 boys, 5 daughters.
Oh. Yeah, 33 grandchildren.
Wonderful.
Well, the oldest boy really helped out in that. He has 9
children.
That's wonderful. And where are they?
All over.
Yeah, we've got 2 on the East Coast, 2 on the West Coast, and 3 in Provo.
Oh.
So, but we didn't think we'd ever have any in Provo because we educate them and they go.
Uh-huh.
But our boys came back, and one of our boys is a mechanical engineer, and he has a degree, a master's degree in business administration. And then Tracy graduated in chemistry and almost had a PhD, but he quit before he got through. He had so many children, he couldn't keep it up. So he didn't quite get his PhD, but he was very good. Mm-hmm. So he worked for Hewlett Packard, and he should have stayed there because he never had a really good job since then.
Oh.
And Hewlett Packard gave him full, what do they call it?
They treated him as though he had a PhD, and if he wasn't, to have a doctor's degree in chemistry or something, it's a club.
Yeah.
Not as bad as some other professions, but it's still, you know, if you don't have the degree, you're not any good.
If he'd been in the engineering area, he'd have been all right, but he was in the research lab. That's where he got his job, and there you had to have your PhD to be one of the boys, so to speak. But he had a good job there, and he was doing well. And then his brother decided to quit and come back and go into his own business. He'd been in engineering. And so Tracy decided he'd come back and go into his own business. But David knew what he wanted to do and had something that he could work on. But both of them worked 1 year on their project, and then they had to go back to work.
Too bad.
So, yeah. And they've been independent ever since. They went back to work, and then Tracy Jr. And David both quit Mega Diamond, which was a company that my husband started down at Provo. And Tracy, they all quit at the same time. But Tracy Jr. should not have, because he had this big family and another research project. He never learned. So now he's working for David. If anyone in our family gets rich, it'll probably be David.
Well, that brings me to Mega Diamond. So how did you happen to do that? How did you happen to...
Well, what...
Did you make it or discover it?
Well, you have to go beyond Mega Diamond. When I was back at General Electric Company, well, I guess I start sooner than that. People had been trying to turn graphite, the stuff in your lead pencil, into diamond for 175 years.
Oh, really?
Before I finally did it. And what had happened was that I was interested in it, and I read all about it while I was a graduate student at the University of Utah. And it was generally thought that diamonds were formed deep in the earth under high heat and pressure. But nobody knew how to make a high-pressure, high-temperature machine that could get to what people thought was required to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's always the possibility that maybe it didn't require heat and pressure. And so I worked on it a little bit on my master's degree at the University of Utah without any high-pressure, high-temperature equipment. Then I went to General Electric. And... at General Electric, there was a Nobel Prize winner, Percy Bridgman, who had worked in the field of high pressure. He was the most renowned high pressure researcher in the world. And 3 companies, General Electric, General Electric, the Norton Company, it wasn't 3M. And Carborundum.
Oh.
Carborundum, Norton, and General Electric gave this guy $100,000, that which was a lot of money in 1937. He was a professor at Harvard professor.
For research or for what he did?
For research. Okay. For research. He won the Nobel Prize later on for what he had done. No, I guess he'd won the Nobel Prize already before he got this money. But $100,000, you know, in 1937 for research, that was like millions now. And he spent all that money trying to make diamond, but he didn't succeed. So then, several years later, when the war was over, I was there at General Electric. I went there after 2 years. I was 2 years getting my PhD after I got out of the war. I was in the Navy during the war. But anyway, General Electric officials came in to the chemists. There were about 40 chemists there that time, and told us that they're going to go to work on the problem of turning graphite into diamond. Just for prestige purposes, if nothing else, because it'd never been done. Oh. See, they didn't anticipate any commercial value, really. Just do this, because so many had tried, and a lot of the people had tried and all had Nobel Prizes. They didn't ever give me one, I don't know why, but anyway. Anyway, so if
I'm just going to turn the heat up, I can hear you.
Well, there were 40 chemists, all PhDs, in the chemistry department. They'd been hiring like crazy when the war was over, these young men just out of school. And so they call us in a meeting, says, we want to work on the diamond problem. Who wants to work on it? And they already had two physicists who had started work on the problem. But they decided they ought to have some chemists. It's just as much a chemical problem, if not more than a physical problem. So I was the only one who wanted to do it. For the other guys, it was too long a shot. Hey, what the heck? 175 years had gone by with all these great guys trying to do it, and they hadn't done it. Well, it's a long, long story, but what happened was that the two physicists were friends of the director of the laboratory, so they had the inside track all the time. I was the first Mormon to ever work in the General Electric lab, and that was against me, believe it or not. That was against me. And besides that, I was just a farm kid from Marriott. I hadn't been to Princeton or Yale. I graduated from the University of Utah. See, so all that was against me. Mm-hmm. What I learned, though, when I got there, I was awfully afraid that I knew the Princeton, the MIT, and Caltech, and Harvard guys and whatnot, Yale, might be smarter than me, but they weren't. Mm-hmm. I found out I knew just as much they did. Mm-hmm. So that helped me. Mm-hmm. But the fact that these two physicists were great buddies of the director of the lab didn't do me any good, because they got the money and the opportunities and whatnot. So I invented a machine in my head that ought to get the high pressures and temperatures. And of course, they didn't want to give me any money to build it, because the two physicists, Strong and Bundy, had already decided how they were going to do it. And it required the purchase of a $150,000 press, you know, for the force. It was 1,000 tons of force. But they did not have much of an idea about how they were going to get the temperature in there or anything else. So I got tired of waiting for these guys. Their job was to get us some equipment. So I decided to work on it, and I went to the shop, and I told, they had a really good machine shop.
But he didn't have a shop order.
I didn't have an order. I was not authorized to use the shop. So I told the guys, I said, hey, look, I have this neat idea. Work on this in your spare time. And they did. But 6 months went by, you know. It could have been done in a couple of weeks. And so when that thing came out, it looked like it was going to do the job. Physicists and chemists had estimated that you would need a temperature of 1,000 degrees centigrade. That's roughly 2,000 degrees. It's higher than required to melt steel, see. But at the same time, you would need, let's see, I've calculated this, about a pressure of about, 450,000 pounds per square inch. Now that's pretty high, you know. In your automobile tire, it's only 30 pounds per square inch. 450,000 pounds per square inch. Well, the machine I built would do better than that, both in temperature and pressure, and it was made out of steel. There's a superior substance to steel known as tungsten carbide, cemented tungsten carbide. And it was impressive enough that they should have started paying attention to it. But, you know, when some superior guys were older and had been to better schools than I had, supposedly, and were friends of the boss, they didn't pay much attention to me.
They said they were going to build this big press, and they had it under construction. They had to go clear the press together. So they didn't listen to him.
So I said I was going to make this short. And anyway, I didn't exactly know who my boss was. I was kind of floating at that time. So, so anyway, a guy named Lieb Hosky was running seminars in what was called the guest house on the property. And I said, hey, you know, nobody will listen to me. Can I?